Welcome to the Brighton Book Club on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, a monthly show dedicated to all things books, reading and writing in Brighton and beyond. We've got a really special show for you guys today, the idea of which came from a Twitter interaction I had with book blogger Jules Swain. Jules and I were both voicing our frustration about the publishing industry, how so many non-writer celebrities were getting huge book deals, how only massively well-known authors were making book shows on TV, and how marketing budgets are so unfairly distributed. So, this month, Jules and I each chose four authors who we'd like to see a light shone on. We'll also discuss this month's book club book, My House is Falling Down by Mary Loudon, chosen by Jules, and I'll talk to local author Katie Massey, whose new book, Are We Home Yet, is out soon with Jacaranda. As you may or may not know, the book club is also available as a podcast, which you can download from wherever you get yours. You can get in touch with us via email at btnbookclub@gmail.com and follow us on Instagram at btnbookclub. Here's today's show. Welcome to the book club, Jules. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Can you firstly introduce yourself to us?
Yeah, so my name's Jules. I live in West Yorkshire. I'm a clinical supervisor, which probably most people don't know what that is, but actually I'm a paramedic with some additional skills. And I've been doing that for about 11 years, and it can be quite stressful and quite tiring, but I do love it as well.
And you're also a book blogger, right? So anyone listening, if you don't know what a book blogger is, how would you describe it?
Personally, I don't have a blog, but I do a lot of reviews. So I review books on Amazon and on Goodreads. And I just tweet all the time about books that I love. And over time, that's just built up to people asking me if I'd like to read books and review them, which is lovely.
And can we talk a bit about the Twitter book community? Because it's a really quite welcoming corner of the kind of quite often toxic environment that Twitter is.
Yeah, it is. I think book Twitter is lovely, and I've got in touch with lots of lovely people who talk about books all the time. Publishers and publicists and agents and authors, and I just found everybody really engaging, and books is just a huge part of my life and something that I talk about all the time, especially on Twitter. So yeah, it's a great welcoming part of Twitter, definitely.
So we united over our frustration about the publishing industry and the kind of way that books are marketed and that certain celebrity authors get so much more attention than other authors. Do you want to talk a bit about how you feel about that?
Yeah, I just think that there's a lot of talk on social media, and obviously we've seen some book programmes coming out at the moment, which in the beginning, I was a little bit frustrated about the format of some of those, because they did seem to be based around celebrities. And having watched a couple of those programmes, I do kind of eat a little bit of humble pie, because they have talked about a lot of books that are not as well known and authors that are not as well known, which is great. But I am a bit more of a champion of authors that are not as well known. And one of the authors in particular that included in this podcast, Karen Powell, is an author that I'd actually never heard of until the book was sent to me by Jules Danskin, and it is absolutely one of my favourite books of the year. And it's just lovely that Twitter and other sources of books have brought bring books like that to our attention from other authors that we've not really heard of.
Yeah, definitely. So the other three authors who you chose to kind of shine a bit of a light on today were Nigel Stewart, Claire Chambers and Charlotte Levin. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you loved about their work, just briefly?
Yeah, Claire Chambers' book, Small Pleasures, kind of gave me a bit of a feel of Kate Atkinson. And I hope that Claire doesn't take offence that I refer her to another author. But Kate Atkinson's a big author that I love as well. And she just reminded me of her writing. And Jean is the main character in Small Pleasures, and she's just a character that I absolutely fell in love with. Nigel Stewart's book, Colouring In, is fantastic use of dialogue, and you feel like you're in the room with the people that are talking, that you're a friend of theirs, and you're kind of eavesdropping into the conversation because the dialogue's written so well. And Charlotte Levin's book, If I Can't Have You, I think is just one of those books that resonated a little because the female character is, she's quite a strong character, but she allows herself to be kind of overrun and overpowered by the male character in the book. And I think it's just fantastic that this female character is smart and strong, but she does show kind of weaknesses, if you like, in a way. And that's true to life, isn't it? It's just because we are supposedly smart and strong people doesn't mean that we don't allow ourselves to be overpowered at times. So that's what I loved about that one too.
Amazing. So the four authors that I chose were Stuart Evers, because I'm sure you've heard of NetGalley, Jules, but Stuart works for NetGalley, and I kind of been working behind the scenes in publishing for years, and I just was so desperate to see what someone who must read and, you know, read so many books has to write, basically. Liz Oko's book, The Returnees, I wanted to talk about because my friend Sarah of Books and Rhymes really, really loved it, and we're going to do that as our book club next month. Serena Kaur is a fresh new voice in British Asian fiction, and she's really not afraid to like push boundaries with what she talks about. She's a really exciting writer. And finally, Phil Bowne. I read a really early draft of his book, Cows Can't Jump, years ago, and we've kind of stayed in touch, and he's now published with Ninja Tree Press, and I'm really excited for him to kind of talk about that one. So should we hear from them?
Yes, that'd be lovely.
Hi everybody, it's Nigel Stewart here, the author of Colouring In and The Lines Between Lies. I'm based in Lancashire. I live about halfway between Preston and Blackpool, and I currently work in the IT industry as a contracts manager. I've no academic or professional background as a writer, but I've always had a day job with a high degree of written work, and I think that's taught me a lot about how to structure documents, how to use the tools efficiently, and above all, how to use language, especially when conveying complex or difficult messages in as simple way as possible. I think the other side of my writing background, which is really important, is songwriting. I'm a musician, and I was in bands for most of my teens and 20s, and I've always written song lyrics, and I think that teaches you about the rhythm of words, but it also teaches you that you have to keep trying different things. Because the words have to fit with a melody and a vocal and a harmony and a rhythm. So that's always been a really important thing for me. My publishing journey is a bit strange, really. I started the book that became Colouring In 1990, and it took me about 4.5 years to finish. And I was then confronted by pretty much a closed shop. I found publishing quite elitist, and that I wasn't wearing the right tie and hadn't come from the right place. But I think it's also true that I really had no idea what I was doing. I didn't sell myself or the book terribly well, and I was left with a sense of despondency, really. And it was only when self-publishing came along that I was able to do something useful with the book, and I self-published Colouring in December 2016, after about 18 months of hard graft, a lot of editing, a great deal of self-doubt. But I think that was a massive high, because it showed me that people responded positively to my writing and the storytelling. But above all, it led to the collaboration that I have today with Purple Parrot Publishing, a local to Blackpool indie publisher, and that led to the re-edition of Colouring In that's available now, but also to The Lines Between Lies, which was published about 5 or 6 weeks ago. But above all, it gave me the confidence to keep going, to write more, to try different things and new ideas. And I've already finished a third book, and I'm about to start my fourth novel, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. I see the two books as really different. Colouring In is a love story. It's imaginative and emotional. It's got a sort of pastoral, elegiac sense to it. And as such, I think it's quite a romantic story, not in a hearts and flowers sense, just in the sense that it's about the individual and it's about the creative. Whereas The Lines Between Lies is a thriller, but it also satirizes the way lives are led online by people and on social media. It's raw and it's bleak in places. It's quite violent, and I think it's a tough book, but I'm really proud of it and I'm really pleased with it. And what's been great about the feedback that I've had for both books is that people seem to respond to the characters who they see as real. And people have told me that they really like the dialogue. Somebody told me that they actually felt they were in the room listening to a conversation between James and Laura in Colouring In. And that's great feedback. So, if you want to follow me on Twitter, my profile name is @MeNigelStu. And if you should do that, my website is in my profile. My website's developing slowly, but I'm getting there. The books are available from the usual suspects, Amazon and Waterstones. But if you can, and if you are interested in buying it, by all means, go to your independent local bookshop and ask them to order it for you, or one of the online bookshops, because I think that's the future for book selling, especially for relatively unknown authors. And that is me. Just wanted to say thank you to Anna for the opportunity to do this, and to wish you all the best with the podcast. And if you do buy either of my books, please do get in touch and tell me what you think.
Hello everyone, my name is Elizabeth Oko. I am a Nigerian writer and photographer with a penchant for storytelling and wanderlust. I hold a degree in psychology and sociology from the University of Sussex, and my work has been published in both online and print magazines such as Positive News, Gal Dem, amongst others, as well as curated in exhibitions internationally. My debut novel, The Returnees, was published on the 6th of August, 2020 by Hodder & Stoughton. And I am currently working on my second novel and empowering women through the art of boudoir photography. My journey to publication was an interesting one. It sort of started in very late 2017, either November or December, I believe, when I submitted to the Future Bookshelf Scheme, which was devised by the Hachette Book Group. It was sort of a way to, publish underrepresented writers by, helping to bridge that gap between writers and publishers. So I did submit to their open calls late 2017, totally forgot all about it until much later in 2018, when I got an email from my editor saying, I'd gone through the process of, them going through 750 submissions, and my novel was, one of the ones that had emerged that they would love to publish. So I and two other people were selected from 750 submissions. I was totally gobsmacked and, excited about it all. And that was in 2018. I signed the deal for my debut novel, and 2019 we started working on it with my commissioning editor. Going through the whole process of, editing the manuscript, sending it off to a copy editor, line editor, and so many other people in the process to get the book to the best shape possible. And after that, we worked on the cover design, and I was eagerly anticipating the release this year. So that was sort of like the journey to publication for me. Very not the norm. But still published with a traditional publisher. So The Returnees is about three British Nigerians who moved from London to Lagos, and the book covers the first year of their lives there. It looks about how they sort of integrate into the society, how they sort of develop and come to terms with their own identity in terms of the culture, how they see people and interact with people there in Lagos, in Nigeria, and how all of this sort of shapes their lives and their sense of belonging and sense of self. The book also explores the developments and transformations happening in Nigeria and uses these three characters to really explore various themes. And if anyone's sort of, curious about what Nigerian culture is, what the society is, wants to really feel and have a sense of the people, The Returnees is the perfect book to do that, because for me it was a means and a way to document our present history in the country. My thoughts on the publishing industry. I definitely have much more of a respect for the publishing industry. I think as an avid reader growing up, gobbling up so many books, never realizing all the work and all the people involved in it, it's sort of been really interesting being sort of on the back end, preparing a book for, almost a year and a half. It takes that long to work on the book, and for some writers, even much more to write the book itself. And you can imagine readers reading it within a day, 2 days, or a week, and it's like all the effort and all of that comes out so beautifully into a work of art that can be, appreciated, learned from, or just, inspire people. So it's been a real eye opener for me. So my experience has been quite amazing. There's nothing else for me to compare it to because this is my first novel, but it's been great nonetheless. And there've definitely been highs and lows of trying to get a cover designer, trying to like see things through how I want them to come out, being published during a pandemic and not having the usual experience first time authors would have, not being able to have like a launch party, not being able to attend physical events and meet readers and people who love the work in person. That has sort of, the current state of affairs in the world has sort of shifted and changed, and I guess impacted on what my experience would have been otherwise. But still, it's been, a surreal experience. It's been an amazing experience, and I'm just so thankful and happy it's, it's finally out. This is my baby, which I sort of conceived the idea in 2015, and now it's finally here, and people get to like, read it. So that has been really, really wonderful. How can you find me? You can definitely find me on all social media platforms using my handle, which is at Liz Oko. It's LizeOkoh, and that could be on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. And of course, I do have my own website, which is ElizabethOko.com, ElizabethOkoh.com. Please do check out The Returnees, leave your feedback, leave reviews, do tag me on any of the social media platforms you're on. And yeah, can't wait to hear what you think about it. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hello, my name's Charlotte Levin, and I'm the author of If I Can't Have You, which was out in hardback in July and is due out in paperback in February with Pam McMillan. My journey to publication wasn't a particularly smooth one. I racked up a lot of rejections, 32 in total. I sent out my manuscript far too early, and so it was basically had three good chapters, and then the rest of it was a mess. And I got quite a few full requests, but then when I sent them out, the remainder, it wasn't so great. A lot of the feedback was that it was a mess, but also that you can't have something that's part thriller, part human condition, and part humorous. So I wasn't prepared to change that because that's what I wanted to write, and if it couldn't be published, then it couldn't be published. But I wasn't prepared to change it to fit in. But what I could change was that it was a mess, and so I spent the next 6 months really working so hard on it around the clock. I also have a job at a small business, and
And it really, I worked really hard on it, and I could tell it was so much better after the 6 months and I'd worked on it. And I sent it out again, and again I got lots of full requests. And this time I posted about that on Twitter, and my agent contacted me, and she asked if she could read it, and she really liked it, and I really liked her, and so she became my agent. And the road to with the publisher was a little bit smoother, in because my publisher contacted my agent within a day, and he really liked it. And it takes some time because it has to go through meetings and things, but he put in a preemptive offer, and I was delighted to accept it. My book is about a young woman called Constance Little, who has fled Manchester for London following her mother's death, and she lives a very lonely existence. And when she meets the new doctor at the private medical practice where she works, she instantly falls for him, and they start this affair, and she believes she's found the love and security that she craves. But when he ends it, she cannot let it go. So the book is essentially her descent into obsession and her unraveling, and essentially becoming a stalker. But it's not a standard stalker novel. It's, I wanted to do something really realistic and about what would make someone do that. And it's quite debatable who the villain of the piece is. So yeah, it's a quirky thriller, I would say. And the publishing industry, I mean, I've been so lucky. I feel really blessed that with Pam McMillan, they've been so lovely. But it's a funny old business, and I realise that I don't really understand it, and neither do most readers, writers that I know. And we've debut novelists have formed a group, and we sort of lead each other, not knowing, none of us know anything, but we sort of ask questions and support each other. So that's been really nice. But it is a strange industry, and it's really strange how you have this dream of getting published, but once you are, you realise that you still, the goalposts move all the time, and you're not actually just satisfied with that. So that's been a real learning curve. You can find me mainly on Twitter, on tinycharlotte72. I'm there a lot, or I'm also on Instagram, which is tinycharlotte29. Or on Facebook, Charlotte Levin Author. And my book is available on Amazon and Waterstones and all good book outlets. So thank you very much.
My name is Stuart Evers, and my second novel, The Blind Light, was published in June by Picador. It's a novel set over the last 60 years of British history and focuses on a family of four, beginning in 1959 and ending in 2019. It's taken over 7 years to write. 7 years of false starts, rewrites, research, rewrites and reappraisals. A novel that consumed me when I was working at my day job at NetGalley, the digital advanced reading copy platform I helped run in the UK, while trying to be a good father to my two kids. I suppose that's a good place to start with The Blind Light. The idea of family. What constitutes family is a question that recurs in my work. How are families formed? How do they function? How are they affected by outside pressures? Who are we when we say we're part of a family? And who are we when we're not? These were questions at the back of my mind when I began The Blind Light. The genesis of the idea came from some research I was doing about Britain's plans for the aftermath of a nuclear war. Having watched lots of Protect and Survive videos and other historical films, I came across an old Pathé newsreel about a project in Cumbria called Doomtown. It's like a desert of wrecked houses where national servicemen would spend 3 weeks learning how to cope after the bomb had dropped. The narrator of the film is clipped and jolly, and so are the faces of the servicemen. That is all except for two. There's a quick shot of one man giving his friend, who's dressed up as though he's injured, a cup of tea. And in that act of kindness, I kind of saw the whole book. Two men from very different backgrounds who have both seen the end of the world. How would it affect them? What would happen once they made their way back to normal life? Could there be a normal life after seeing the end of the world? In attempting to answer those questions, the book became even bigger than I'd first thought. It's a family story, yes, a story of long-term friendship, certainly, and definitely a love story. But it's also a revenge fantasy, an exploration of class, northernness, the patriarchy and modern sexuality. And there's also some jokes and references to ABBA, Kate Bush and early 90s rave music. In short, it could have been 2,000 pages long, and but for my editor and agent, it probably could have been. After 7 years of work, I finally finished the first draft a week before Christmas. I was down in Norwich, and there it was in front of me, and it was The Blind Light. And it was finished, and it was ready to go, and had a home in the UK eventually, and in the US eventually too. And then, after many rewrites again and edits, it was published and COVID happened. In some ways, the book feels more prescient now. Its concerns are so current, even I can't quite believe that questions of class and the North-South divide are dominating the news cycles. And it's interesting to me that people are reading it now as a kind of book of hope, taking from it that the book says that we've survived so much and against so many odds before, we'll certainly do it again. And I'd be intrigued to find out what you feel if and when you pick up The Blind Light. If you're interested in finding out more about me, you can find me on Twitter. The handle is @StuartEvers. If you like, I'm usually there recommending books that are not my own. And if you do wish to read The Blind Light, do please consider buying from an independent bookshop or from Waterstones, which is where I used to work. So thank you very much for listening to me. That's Stuart Evers, The Blind Light, published by Picador, £18.99 hardcover. Thank you.
Hi, Anna and everyone at the Brighton Book Club. My name's Karen Powell, and I had a novel called The River Within published in September just gone. A little bit about me and my background. I'm from Rochester in Kent originally, but I now live in York, where I work for the Yorkminster Fund, a charity that raises funds for the restoration of the cathedral. My writing career started, I suppose, back in my early 30s, and I spent a lot of time ever since then trying to secure an agent. Had a few near misses, but it never really quite happened for me. Had a breakthrough in 2017, though, when an early draft of The River Within won a New Writing North Award. That's run by the Northern Writers, which is an amazing organisation supporting new and emerging writers in the North. Part of that prize was a manuscript assessment, which was really helpful. I rewrote the novel, and then the following year I secured representation with Samuel Hodder at the Blake Friedman Agency. And in 2019, Sam sold the rights to The River Within to Europa Editions, who also published the amazing Elena Ferrante. So that was pretty exciting. Europa also bought rights to the book for the US and Italy. In terms of that whole experience, I have to say it seemed to take forever to get a foot in the door. And that felt pretty dispiriting at times. And I nearly gave up on many, many occasions. But once through the door, there's an incredible amount of support that kicks in terms of your agent, your editor, the publicity and sales teams, and also since publications, support from lots of lovely book bloggers like Jules Swain, for instance. Another joyous thing for me about Northern Writers was the chance to meet other authors who've now become really good friends. Writing's such a solitary business, so it's great to be able to offer each other support and feedback during those inevitable sort of highs and lows of the writing and publishing process. So if I can, I'd love to tell you a little bit about The River Within. The book is set on a country estate in North Yorkshire in the 1950s, and it's a retelling of Hamlet from the point of view of the female characters. In this case, Venetia Richmond, the newly widowed lady of the manor, and Lenny, the daughter of her late husband's private secretary. The book opens with the discovery of the body of Danny Masters, a young man from the estate village who was drowned in the river. In the weeks following his death, secrets come to the surface that have a devastating impact on Venetia, Lenny, and ultimately the entire community. The book examines themes of infatuation, jealousy, grief, class, motherhood, and in particular, the restrictions placed on women by society in that period. So if that sounds like your kind of thing, then your local bookshop may have the book in stock or should certainly be able to order it for you. There are also signed first editions of The River Within available in-store or online from the wonderful Topping & Co bookshops. And finally, if you'd like to know more about me or the book, do please follow me on Instagram or Twitter. It'll be great to meet you. Thanks so much. Bye.
Hello, my name is Phil Bowen. I'm the author of Cows Can't Jump. It's my debut novel. It was published in September 2020. I'll tell you a little bit about myself quickly. I'm 27 years old. I live in London. I grew up in Bicester in Oxfordshire. And currently I work for the Wombles. They're a classic British entertainment brand, I guess. It's all about educating and inspiring the next generation to love and look after the environment. So that's great fun, as you can imagine. And if you're familiar with the Wombles, hopefully that's put a smile on your face. I'll tell you a little bit about the book. I'll try not to give too much away because I'm always doing that. So I'll read you the blurb. Billy's desperate to escape. As a gravedigger, he works the ultimate dead-end job. And things only get worse when his granddad becomes engaged to a woman half his age. To top it all, Billy's dad's obsessed with boxing and his mum's having an affair. Celebrities keep dying and Britain waits for the EU referendum. Billy can't take it anymore. Meeting Eva, though, changes everything. She's passionate about all kinds of things, from Russian literature to Gary Newman. And Billy gambles everything for a chance to be with her. And Billy goes on this journey through the novel where he goes hitchhiking with truckers and walking with refugees. And he even has a chance encounter with what he thinks might be suicidal Count. And that's where the book gets its silly title. So hopefully I haven't given you too much info there. That would be a first. I'll tell you a little bit about my journey's publication. As I said earlier, I'm 27 years old, so I'm a bit of a baby in this game. I finished the book when I was 24, 25, so it's been a very steep learning curve. Obviously, I didn't have any experience really of the industry before submitting this book. So it's been really challenging. Obviously, had tons of knockbacks and hurdles to kind of get through. But we got there in the end, and it was a great feeling to finally get the acceptance from Neem Tree Press, who have been a delight to work with. They've been great. But it's a long, long process, and I probably wasn't totally prepared for that mentally. You know, it can take months to hear back from agents and publishers, which is totally understandable. Like, they probably have thousands of submissions at any given time. So yeah, it was tough. But moving on, the next question is about my thoughts on the publishing industry as a whole. I've had generally really great experiences. I have had bad experiences too. I definitely had my problems along the way. I felt like I'd been sort of messed around a few times when I was submitting the book. But thankfully, once I got in touch with Neem Tree Press, it's been great. I've had no problems, which is a relief, I suppose. But as a wider comment, I think the discussion point on the show today is about the rise of the celebrity author. And it's something that is frustrating as a debut author, that you see all these celebrities with books out and they're kind of taking all the attention. It's just hard enough to kind of make noise about a book when you're a new author, but then when you've got to compete with, you know, people that are on the TV every day, it makes life even harder. But that's not really why I'm frustrated, I don't think. I think the reason I'm frustrated is because it feels like the route to publication has changed or is shifting. And I think it's shifting towards this idea that you have to be famous first and then an author second. But we won't dwell on that because, like I said, my experience has been really, really positive. I'd just like to say, actually, that book bloggers are the best people. I know they're not necessarily in publishing, but in the kind of book community, I just found them to be amazingly supportive and willing to go like the extra mile and posting reviews and being championing books, whether it be a bestseller or an unknown debut like myself. They've been really, really great. So I think that's the sort of beating heart of publishing. It's like the grassroots. And I try and focus now more on that rather than the cynical side of me that thinks, oh, what's his face off the TV? He's got a book. So yeah, thank you very much for having me on. Really, really appreciate the opportunity to be on the show. If you'd like to find out a little bit more about myself or Cows Can't Jump, feel free to check out my website. It's philipbowne.com, B-O-W-N-E. It's a slightly weird name. Or I'm on Twitter at chumpybloke. Again, slightly weird name. Thanks again.
Hi, cheers. Everyone. Bye. I'm Serena Kaur, and my first novel, All the Words Unspoken, came out in April. I started writing it immediately after graduating, and I'd only really written poetry prior to All the Words Unspoken, so this really was my first huge writing project. Writing this novel helped me survive one of the most difficult periods of my life. I currently live with a neurological condition that drains me of energy, and when I was writing All the Words Unspoken, it was probably the worst that it's been. When I wasn't sleeping, I was writing this novel, and I gave up all other activities and even going out to do it. But I was glad to use up what little energy I had on this book. I could feel that it wanted to be written, and I needed to get it out. The journey towards publication wasn't easy. Of course, like a lot of authors, I dealt with rejection. And I am a really sensitive person, so that wasn't fun. But, you know, in this field, it is expected. You do need to have thick skin. I did get myself an agent, but after a while, it became clear that she wasn't right for me at all. So we did go our separate ways. And at that point, I just decided to submit to Red Door myself, and my work got accepted. And working with everyone at Red Door has honestly been a truly great experience, and I've loved every moment of it. Okay, so what is All the Words Unspoken about? Well, it follows two British Asian characters, Mansi and Aryan, as they come together in an arranged marriage. And both of them have secret pasts that they're keeping from each other. And as they try to force themselves to love each other, those secrets are working their way up to the surface and could destroy their union. This novel explores a lot of taboo topics in South Asian culture, such as abortion, sexuality, mental health. In particular, it explores the "what will people say" mentality that penetrates South Asian culture and what surrendering to that can do to you. It's definitely not a simple love story. What do I think about the publishing industry? I do think there is a lack of diversity, and you know, I do notice that. Growing up, it was hard to find Asian characters in novels, especially commercial novels. And I also don't think publishers are giving enough new authors a chance. I feel as if they're producing more of the same, and that there is room for change. Okay, so yeah, that's everything from me. You can get All the Words Unspoken from Amazon and other good bookstores if you're interested. So thank you for listening, and thank you, Anna, for having me on.
My name is Claire Chambers, and I'm the author of 9 novels, including 2 for young adults. I currently work as a Royal Literary Fund Fellow at the University of Kent, but for the 10 years prior to that, I worked part-time in a comprehensive school in Croydon as an administrator. I wrote my first book in 1989 when I'd just left university and was spending a year in New Zealand with my boyfriend who had a teaching exchange. It took most of that year to write the book, and when I came back I showed it to a few agents who were politely encouraging without actually offering to represent me. "Show us your next book," was their kind offer. In the meantime, I got a job as a secretary at the literary publisher André Deutsch, by the time-honoured method of writing to every publishing house in London and begging for work. The day my letter arrived at Deutsch, the secretary had called in sick, so they rang me up and asked me to cover. By exaggerating my proficiency as an audio typist, I got a foot in the door. And by the time the secretary came back, I'd ingratiated myself sufficiently to be offered a full-time job doing permissions, typing and admin for the editorial department. After about a year, I plucked up the courage to show the editor Esther Whitby my novel. She liked it and passed it to Diana Attill, who was still working full-time in her mid-70s. She also liked it, and I was duly offered the princely sum of £1,000 for world rights. I'd worked there long enough to know that this was not going to be a gateway to fame, success and wealth, that most books sink without trace, and most writers have a side job or a partner with a salary to support them. But I continued to write and publish fiction at a rate of one book about every 3 years, getting favourable reviews but never earning more than the equivalent of a modest part-time salary, and often much less. Then in 2015 I had the unpleasant experience of realising I'd wasted 5 years in a failing project. My regular publisher turned it down, and my agent was unenthusiastic about trying it elsewhere. For a year or two I gave up writing. I felt that at 50, with a poor sales record, anything I wrote would be untouchable and I'd never be published again. This was the lowest point of my career. Fortunately, my husband was having none of it and persuaded me to start again, and my most recent book, Small Pleasures, is the result. The central idea of a woman claiming to be a virgin mother is based on a tabloid sensation from the 1950s. The Sunday Pictorial claimed to have found a woman who had given birth to a daughter without the involvement of a man. Doctors subjected her to numerous tests without satisfactorily demolishing her story. Small Pleasures is both a mystery and a love story. Set in South London in 1957, it concerns Jean, a feature writer on a local paper, disappointed in love and, on the brink of 40, living a limited existence with her invalid mother from which there is no likelihood of escape. When a young Swiss woman, Gretchen Tilbury, contacts the paper to claim that her daughter is the result of a virgin birth, it is down to Jean to discover whether she's a miracle or a fake. The more she investigates, the more she becomes drawn into the Tilbury's family life, and her awakening, at the 11th hour, to friendship, buried maternal longing and passion, comes at a high price for all involved. With a new agent and a new publisher, my experience of the industry this time around has been quite different, and I hope an encouragement to other writers who feel the system is rigged against them. For the first time, I had several publishers bidding for the book. My age, media invisibility and poor sales history didn't seem to be a deterrent. When I was first published in the 1990s, marketing managers used to say, "Oh, this is such a word-of-mouth book," by which they meant there is no publicity budget. But now, with the reach of social media, word-of-mouth actually means something. And I'm indebted to all those early readers, reviewers and bloggers who got behind the book and enthused about it from the start. They do a great job for nothing more than the sheer love of books, and writers and publishers are lucky to have them. Small Pleasures is out in hardback from all the usual places, ideally your local indie bookshop, on Kindle, or it can be ordered from your local library.
Welcome to the actual book club section of the Brighton Book Club, and I'm joined again by lovely Jules, who chose this month's book club book, which is My House is Falling Down by Mary Loudon. Jules, what is this book about and why did you love it so much?
It's basically about a lady who has an affair, but she is very open with her husband about this. And she's not lied to him about it. He knows that she's seeing this other man, which is obviously quite a unique take on infidelity, because obviously people are usually doing it secretively. But what I loved about it was not just that relationship with her husband and her lover, but also Mary explores other relationships, so from their childhoods, the way they were brought up, and siblings. And so it's not just a partnership, it's also about how other relationships in your life form the person that you are. And that's what I really loved about it.
Yeah, and I thought that because it's quite a quiet book and the nuance and the detail are so beautifully done. And I don't want to give too much away, but one of the characters is profoundly deaf. And the way that as soon as you find that out, kind of completely flips the way that you see the whole narrative. I just thought it was so clever. Jules, thank you so much for joining us today. How can we follow you on Twitter and Instagram?
On Twitter, my Twitter handle is at Jules Buddle, and on Instagram I am at Jupa Jules, which sounds a ridiculous name, but that's a nickname given to me by my sister. I am more active on Twitter rather than Instagram, so but if you'd like to look me up, there I am.
And before you go, what book are you really excited to read about this autumn?
I'm really looking forward to reading Sarah Franklin's new book, How to Belong. I loved her previous book, Shelter, and it's a very autumnal cover on how to belong. Loved Shelter, so really looking forward to this one.
Massey, welcome to the Brighton Book Club. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Anna. Thanks for having me.
You are very welcome. So, can you introduce yourself to start?
My name's Katie Massey. I've lived in Brighton for almost 5 years this time, but I lived in Brighton in my early 30s, which is 20 years ago now, I hate to admit. And I lived here for 5 years before going back up to Yorkshire, which is where I'm from. And that's where I was in the gap. And I wanted to get back while I was there.
So how do you, I'm going to ask you what it's like to be a writer in Brighton, about the writing community here and how it's different from other places you've lived.
One of the reasons why I wanted to move back here was because there is a really supportive writing community here. There was in Yorkshire, but Yorkshire's a big county and there's fewer writers. So we were much more spread out and it was much more difficult to mix and support each other and to actually meet in person. Back in the days when we could meet in person and have a glass of wine. And I feel at home in Brighton because Brighton is more of a community of individuals.
Absolutely. So I'm going to ask you now about two projects that you've worked on previously, Tangled Roots and Who We Are Now.
I'm sorry to correct you, Anna. It's Who Are We Now? Who Are We Now? It's a question, and it was a project that I raised funding for from the Arts Council to enable me to go around the country and run workshops where I invited anybody and everybody who felt that they had been particularly impacted by the Brexit referendum result to come to a workshop. Sometimes they were held during literature festivals, for instance. In Norwich, the Centre for Writing hosted me. People came and we talked and we wrote. And I asked them after the workshop, or rather at the end of the workshop, if they would like their work to be included in an anthology. And the result, Who Are We Now, is a snapshot in time of around a dozen writers all writing about their experience of that upheaval, if you like, that time of upheaval.
And how about Tangled Roots? How did that come about?
Well, Tangled Roots is slightly similar, except that it doesn't take one moment in time. Tangled Roots, again, I raised the funding for it and I travelled around the country with a stage show, actually, a review show that was based around first person testimonies of what it's like to grow up mixed race in a mixed race family in the UK. And from that, I did exactly the same thing at shows. I asked people if they would like to write about their experiences and have them included in an anthology. I also commissioned renowned writers like Bernardine Evaristo and Safra Mansour and Diana Evans to write pieces to go alongside the contributed pieces. And it turned into a book which also includes historical photographs, because most people don't know that there's been mixed families in the UK for hundreds of years. It's a collection of experiences, which seems to be what I do as a writer. I seem to write about lived experience. It's called Tangled Roots. It's available on Amazon and good bookshop.
So talking about lived experience, Katie, your new book, Are We Home Yet, is out now, and this is a memoir. So you've and it's a very wonderful but very exposing book. How was the process of writing it?
I wrote Are We Home Yet before I started working with other people on their life stories, and I wrote it as part of a PhD in life writing. And I absolutely believe that writing is for everybody. I really do. I think writing things down at its most basic level of journaling or or just writing things down when you're confused and you don't know what to do about a decision. And some people write prayers, but writing things down and writing them down from memory and using that writing as a concentrated tool, I think is good for everybody. I finished a PhD 10 years ago, so I finished writing that book a long time ago now. And I would say that I don't think writing's for everybody. I don't think publishing is necessarily for everybody. I think it's taken me a long time to grow into myself to the point where I'm able to put away notions of shame and judgment and put my story out there in a way that is very exposing, I guess. Yeah. But the truth is, you know, the truth isn't an easy thing. And I think the truth is an important thing for other people that might be in situations that are difficult and chaotic.
So if I were to kind of ask you to kind of briefly tell our listeners what Are We Home Yet is about, what would you say?
I would say it's about looking for a sense of home when you don't automatically have a place where you feel comfortable and where you feel you belong. So I write about my mother's story, about her parents coming to the UK from Canada during the Great Depression in the 1930s. And I write about my father's story, how he came from Jamaica to England during the Windrush period, how they meet, they're together very briefly, how I grew up with my mum and my two brothers as a mixed race child in a white family, how my mum made a career in the sex industry, how poor mental health afflicted our family, and sudden death also became a feature of our trying to sort of find a sense of home in the midst of these very disturbing events, I guess.
So this book is part of Jacaranda, who's your publisher's 20 in 20 scheme. What is this?
So Jacaranda wanted to publish 20 non-white writers of colour, whatever terminology you want to use, all in one year. Mm-hmm. And this is because so few writers of colour have published in the course of an ordinary publishing year. Mm-hmm. So I think the last time there were figures, the bookseller did an actual measurement, or was it 2017? I might get this wrong, Anna, but the number was around, it was less than 20 writers had been published, and seven of those were cookbooks.
Wow.
So I think it became something. Valerie Brands, who's a very, very impressive woman who runs Jacaranda, who started the imprint, made this a not only a publishing event, but a campaign that is designed to show just how few of us managed to get our stories out there. And I am very grateful to Jacaranda because they published my story pretty much as I wrote it. They didn't ask me to make a whole load of changes and change the structure. And you know, you've read it, so I go back and forth through time to try and explain how our family got to where it was at any point in time, so that you understand us, not just as a mixed race family, but you understand the world that we're in at any point. And that was very important to me. And that was the first offer I got from an agent or a publisher that said, we love this story, but we love the way you've written it, and we don't want to change it too much. So I'm very grateful to them.
Fantastic. And before we go, Katie, you do some work with New Writing South, who are based here in Brighton. Can you talk a little bit about your relationship with New Writing South?
My relationship with New Writing South, well, I've been a member of the board of New Writing South for a couple of years now, and they're working really hard as a literature development organisation to broaden the range of people that engage with literature in the region, and that was something that I really wanted to help with, to have an input into. The subject of my research when I did my PhD was just how few people who are not male, pale and middle class get to put their stories out there. That was the subject of my research. So when I came across the team at New Writing South, I was very keen to help in any way I could, and the way I could help was by serving on the board. I think, you know, we're going through difficult times, and live literature has been hit in exactly the same way as other live art forms. And live literature is really important. We're talking about spoken word, poetry, authors doing their one-person shows. So New Writing South really helped facilitate those stories getting out there. And since March, New Writing South have moved a lot of their activities online. I am going to be teaching a memoir course, actually, just a six-week short course for them, and that's going to be done via Zoom. So I think, as well as working to make literature more relevant out in the community, they're also kind of showing a way that artists can still reach an audience. And I guess this conversation is part of this too, Anna, if you give the props. they're showing that we can still reach an audience even though we can't actually meet at the moment. And that's really important. So it's easy to feel quite hopeless as an artist at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Katie, how can we find and follow you and buy a copy of your new book?
You can find the... I said earlier that Tangled Roots is available for sale on Amazon, and it's not actually... So if my website is katiematthew.com, anybody who's interested in Tangled Roots will find lots of information and how to order that there. Are We Home Yet? And Who Are We Now? I do like those questions. Are both on Amazon. Are We Home Yet had sold out on Amazon the last time I had a look, actually. But it is available from Waterstones, online and physically in shops, and it will be back in stock on Amazon soon. If they want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at TangledRoots1, and on Facebook I'm Katie Matthew Author. So I'm not difficult to find, I don't think. I do my best with social media.
Thank you very much for joining us, Katie.
Not at all. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for asking me about my work.
Thank you for listening to the Brighton Book Club, and thank you to everyone who got involved with today's show. I hope you've discovered a new book or a new author you'd like to read or learn more about. Our book club book next month is Elizabeth Oko's The Returnees. Join us next month for a graphic novel special. I'm really, really excited about it. Stay in touch with us on Instagram at BTM Book Club, by email at btmbookclub@gmail.com, and please do subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. It really helps us push up in those charts. Take care and see you soon.